So I like these like big things, software companies that can scale. But when I heard him describing this, I'm like, God, I want to get in on this. Like, this is just so, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back.
What's up? Sean here. We got Sam. And today's episode, we're going to talk about a blue-collar side hustle, a.k.a. the hillbilly of the week. Which is a vending machine business. And Sam breaks down all the numbers behind it. We talk about this idea of creating the edible arrangements of DoorDash through Ghost Kitchens. We talk about the new hottest app in the App Store, the number one app, aka, is this the next Snapchat? Is this the next Clubhouse? We don't know. It's called Paparazzi. And I tell a story around that. And we talk about Vimeo, a business you probably heard of, but may not realize that Vimeo is now a $8 billion business. And then at the end, we shoot the shit with Abreu and the new Abreu, Dan, and you get to meet him a little bit. So that's the last, I don't know, 5-10 minutes of the episode. All right. Great episode. Enjoy.
All right. What's up?
Yo. You know what's funny? I put out that thing for merch designs, and somebody had a great one that was, all right, so the funny ones I thought were somebody made a yada, yada, yada shirt with your face on it. I thought that was funny. And then somebody made one that just goes, it's both our faces, like kind of illustrated. And it just says, Abreu, we good?
Which Wait, is like, really?
Which is what you say at the end of every episode.
Do I really?
Yeah.
And then another guy, so Sean, we're doing this meetup in Miami. By the way, we're calling it
a meetup. I feel like that undersells it, right? Live show, we're going on tour. That sounds more badass than we're doing a meetup.
Well, yes, you're right. But there's two things going on here. The first, I was downplaying it because I didn't know how many people are going to show up.
Yeah.
So we set the limit originally at 400. And then our venue now is changing. And so I don't know how many is going to seat.
Right.
And so we capped it now at 335. That's how many RSVPs we have now. So if more open up, we're going to open it up. But I was doing it to like make it so if I failed, it would be okay. and also, so when you talk about show, I know that I think you're pretty comfortable on stage and you actually aspire to be kind of a professional comedian. I have no idea what we're actually going to talk about.
We haven't even said a word to each other about what are we going to do there.
Yeah, so we'll figure it out. But basically, the way it's working, and we agree to, as per usual, we agree to stuff without thinking it through. But basically, we have a thing in Austin at 6 p.m. on Thursday. That's probably going to end at 10 p.m. And then we have a 7 a.m. flight. And I think that flight is going to land at 12:30 in Miami. And then
these are the logistics people came to listen for.
We have a lot. We're going to be running them out a million miles an hour.
You know what I thought would be a fun idea? I just thought about it actually while I was putting my contacts in before this. I go, what are we going to say on stage? What would be a good live show? Because I was like, either we just do research and we just have like a fire episode where it's like great ideas, great Billy of the week, great business breakdown. We could have that ready. I said, or we could do it. You know, like when you go to a comedy show and they take your phone, they zip it up. So you're like, you can't record this. It's like, well, if they showed up live, what can we get them that's special that we can't just say on air? So I thought maybe, I think each of us probably has a few business stories, war stories that we could share that are entertaining, that you could do kind of in an off the record format. And I feel like we could put out 5 stories that we could tell about stuff, you know, or three or four stories at least that could be entertaining about, you know, something that happened that is, you wouldn't go publish a blog post about it because it's not necessarily the details you can't get out to everybody, but in a trusted group of some of our, you know, biggest fans, I think that's cool.
A 400 person trusted group, but yeah, I think
it's a group of strangers.
I think maybe it might default to like Q&A, but we'll see. It's going to be weird. I think the most amount of people I've ever talked in front of is 5,000, and that's not a big deal. I can do that all day, but never 5,000 people who came to see me just like riff. So that's going to be weird.
All right. A quick message from our sponsor, which is of course HubSpot. Now look, growing a business is tough, and it's tough because a lot of times you have to duct tape a ton of software together to make it work. I've been there, and it's a pain in the butt. You have this thing connecting to that thing and the two things that are being connected. One of them breaks or the thing connecting them doesn't work. And it's a mess. You have all these moving parts and it's just a pain in the butt because you don't know where the single source of truth is. And that's where HubSpot's customer platform comes into play. Finally, you've got this single source of truth where everything is organized and tracked in one place. For example, if you have customers emailing you, they've got really easy ways to see who on your team is replying to which customer, what they're saying, and things like that. And you can track it all in one place. They also have a lot of AI-supported stuff, which means that you can automatically know which type of messaging you need to send to that type of customer. And yes, it sounds natural, like a real person. I actually use it. I use it with my company, Hampton, and it works wonderfully. And when leads come in, you know which channel they came through, you know who's going to follow up with them, and it's all seamless and easy. So if you're interested, it's simple. Go to HubSpot.com and check it out and see how you can use it to grow your business.
But we've got a lot of ideas, and you want to get straight to it?
Yeah, let's do it. Where do you want to start?
You want to actually start? The Vimeo one's not an idea. You have this cool thing about paparazzi, actually a lesson. I want to start with Vimeo because there's no lesson here. I just thought it was cool. Okay. So Vimeo went public 2 days ago. I didn't even know this until I saw the tweet. It was an awesome tweet about the woman was with her kid and saying, like, wishing her mom a good day's work when it goes public.
A good day's work to you, mother.
Child. Like, good luck. It was like a three-year-old saying, you know, good luck as you ring the bell. I love that type of shit. Went public. But there's a background behind Vimeo. So do you use Vimeo? I use it all the time.
I've used it. I think everybody runs into Vimeo once in a while. I don't use it to upload unless I'm like, oh, I need a high quality kind of private thing. And I'm just surprised this company made it. It just seemed like Vimeo was dead. I think it literally died at some point, but they pivoted and made it actually into a great business. So tell me about it.
It never died. So it's always been like kind of popular, like for a very particular type of person. I love watching it on my TV because I've got like a fancy TV and they have fancy videos, like high end videos. And they particularly have like weird stuff, weird music. They've got
fancy weird videos are you watching?
like nature stuff? There's like tons of nature stuff.
Like men and women stuff. Like, what are you watching?
No, like like a drone flying around or something.
Gotcha.
Or you know, stuff that's like it's oddly entertaining. Or they'll have really unique art pieces, like an art video, or so it's very niche. But it's really neat. I love it. But the way it started is actually interesting. So these guys, it was a guy named Ricky Van. I think his name is Ricky Van Veen. He started with a guy named Josh and a guy named Zach. Three of them. They were only 18. And they started this company called College Humor. And you know College Humor.
Of course.
We're a similar age. If you're young and listening to this, you probably don't know it. But basically it was like,
it was Fuck Jerry, but before Instagram.
Exactly. Or Barstool Sports, but not sports.
Right.
And it was like a kind of a smutty, it wasn't smut, but it was like SNL online. And it was cool. And it was one of the first blogs and they started it and it got going. And they also had little side projects. These guys lived in New York and they were just like your typical like 20-year-old cool New Yorker guy where they like, you would see their life and they would start little side projects. It was really fun. One of their side projects was a video uploading tool that they built because they were uploading videos before YouTube was around. Mm. And that was Vimeo. And Barry Diller, who we have to do a deep dive on, he's very fascinating. He started this company called IAC. They're pretty huge. They've owned Match.com, which they spun out to be his own business. They own Tinder. They've owned a ton of stuff, Angie's List. And anyway, he bought that for $20 million in 2006. And he's held it now for almost 15 years. Vimeo, they spun it out. So what Barry Diller and IAC does is they buy these companies, they employ people to run them, and they grow them. Not like crazy fast, but they grow them. And then they spin them out to go public. And it works often. And they went public recently. They bought this business for $20 million. It's now worth $8 billion. Is that crazy?
That's insane.
Publicly traded, worth $8 billion.
By the way, if Vimeo is worth $8 billion, YouTube's worth what? $800? Like, YouTube must be. YouTube is insanely more valuable than Vimeo. So that just seems a little off, right? Like, YouTube would be valued at $80.
Vimeo does like 400 or 500 or 600, so it's like many, almost close to it's half a billion-ish in revenue.
Yeah, but YouTube does like $20 billion in revenue. It's crazy, right?
I'm agreeing with you. YouTube should be worth a lot, but I don't think Vimeo's.
So explain the niche. So Vimeo basically did what? They sort of pivoted from consumers uploading videos to more like businesses or creative people, filmmakers, you know, type of people uploading videos. Is that right?
Yeah. So if you want to upload a video and you want to upload it quickly and you want to upload it in the highest quality possible, you'll use Vimeo and you'll buy a creator's account. They also let you do some editing online that makes it a little bit easier. You can add some captions, things like that. You can have a, people will use it to like store their portfolio. And so what you'll see, if you go on there and you type in like nature, you'll see some video and like, then you'll see like, oh wait, this is by Yeti. And it's Yeti hosting a lot of their cool videos that they'll pay a creator to make for them as like an ad. And they'll, I don't know, actually know where they even display those videos other than Vimeo. But like you'll see, what's the outdoors company that let my people go surfing? North Face. The North Face guy, like you'll see him fishing in a stream telling like a story about the background of the company.
Right.
So it's a lot of outdoorsy, a lot of brand stuff. It's pretty interesting. The niche, I don't actually know how to describe that niche, but it's kind of interesting. Like it's all people who want to have higher quality stuff than YouTube in terms of like resolution. And they also do a couple things that they like goes against their culture. Like they don't have view counts. They don't have a sort by popularity thing. So it makes it a little bit easier to discover stuff that you normally wouldn't have seen.
Well, so, it's good by them because all the other video upload sites, whether it's like Daily Motion or like all those other ones, they all died, right? YouTube just, YouTube took over. It ate everybody up, and Vimeo squirted away and found a niche that works for them that is actually like an $8 billion niche, right? It ended up working out and not like a, oh, that's a lifestyle business kind of way. So, you know, props to them because I don't think this was what most people would have bet was it would be the outcome once YouTube started growing like it did.
So the company, Vimeo has 200 million users. So 200 million people a month, I believe, go and use them. And also they have 1.6 million paying subscribers. So pretty substantial. Another company that I didn't put on here, but is killing it in video. Do you remember Weebly?
Yeah. The website maker?
Oh, sorry, not Weebly. What's the other one that starts with a W?
Wix?
Wistia. You know Wistia? So Wistia is in the same thing. So Wistia is kind of an interesting company. They also started in 2006, and they were based out of Boston, and they raised a shit ton of money, built this business to be like 30, 40, 50 million recurring revenue, and then they bought out their shareholders. They raised money from from KKR, the PE company, and bought out their investors. I bet you that company could be potentially worth $1 billion as well. But they're kind of doing something similar.
Yeah. You know, when last episode I had this thing or not the Mark Lohr one, but the one before that, where I said, you know, one of my learnings that one of the counterintuitive things that I learned is never underestimate these mega trends. Even when you feel like you're late, you're early. And there's another version of that, which is even when you're niche, you're big with a mega trend. And so, Mark Zuckerberg came out, I don't know when it was. I didn't start using this term mega trend until I heard Zuck use it, I think 5 years ago, when he goes, video is a mega trend. I thought, oh, that's interesting. Facebook's not even, at that time, Facebook wasn't even about video. They hadn't launched Watch. The feed was mostly photos and text updates. But they see everything, right? Facebook knows what's going on the internet. They know exactly where all the opportunities are, whether they can capture them or not. And for video, I thought, huh, what does he mean by mega trend? And I think what it means is like mobile, like the internet, like now video, social, these were, there were like trends of trends, meaning like they were going to transform basically every space. And so you saw that, we saw this with video. All of a sudden newspapers or, you know, the kind of the meme for media companies was we're pivoting to video, right? Which is like you used to write articles and now you produce videos. You know, same thing happened with Instagram. You know, more and more Instagram content shifted from photos to videos, either through stories or posts or now like reels or TikToks. And so video just has just eaten up more and more share of people's attention and what the internet is used for. And I think that that's pretty fascinating. And I think this is a good example of video is such a big mega trend that even being the niche kind of like the video uploading site for creative makers, hobbyists, fishermen, and photographers, it's like, boom, $8 billion, you know, $8 billion company if you end up winning that space, that niche. And so, yeah, just another example of do not underestimate a mega trend. Don't think you're late when it's a mega trend, and don't be afraid of going niche because even the niches are big with mega trends. I would say today's mega trends, my personal bets are that today's mega trends are anything that's actually real in machine learning or AI, as well as crypto. I think those are the two mega trends that are happening right now.
Speaking of mega trends, something happened the other day. An app like went crazy viral, and you kind of have an insider story of it.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, so there's this app. So I'll tell you kind of my learning here. Friend of the pod. Actually, he's never come on, but one of our friends, or I don't know if you know him very well. This guy Nikita Beer. He's an entrepreneur. His company was TBH, got acquired by Facebook for $100 million in a really crazy way. They basically were grinding, trying to build like social products, like, you know, the next Twitter, the next Snapchat for a while, many years. And we're just getting really, really smart about it, learning a bunch of stuff, but never hitting the home run. And I think about a few months before they ran out of money, they just threw, you know, they were either going to wind it up, just, all right, let's all go get jobs, or, you know, get acquired somewhere. They threw one last attempt, and they made this app called TBH, and it went viral amongst high schoolers. It was like a app where you were kind of like answering questions or polls about your friends, you know, who's most likely to blah, 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 or who is your favorite person about blah, blah, blah. And then it was a place to go, you know, kind of post like a social network for high schoolers. Takes off. Facebook buys it for, I think, $100 million was the reported price.
And how do you think that deal was structured? $100 million for an app that doesn't, like, it's brand new.
I have no idea. Obviously, it was an overpay. Months later, TBH shut down. No longer, it was kind of a fad, right? It didn't have legs. They shut it down, and they kept, you know, most of the talent. And so, anyways, he's been there for a little while. So he tweets out, when the App Store refreshes, there's a new king, 500,000 installs on day one. All right, you got my attention. I'll bite. What is it? And people start speculating what it is. And I sort of do some internet digging, and I find out, okay, there's this app called Paparazzi. So have you seen what the app is? The app is called Paparazzi. It's currently the number one app in the App Store. It's had over 1 million installs in, I think, less than a week. They're wait list. Basically, they were a test flight app, which is like how you give it to like beta testers. It's not even in the App Store. Their test flight app went viral. And so they had 500,000 people ready and waiting to download the app. So they just rushed it onto the App Store, and bang, they hit the number one. I think they're still number one on the free charts, above Snapchat, above TikTok, above Facebook, above everybody. And okay, so what is Paparazzi? And by the way, Paparazzi has almost the same story as TBH. These guys have been working on this for a while.
For 3 years, I think.
Years, yeah. They were just kind of grinding away, you know, small team. I think they're in LA. And
two brothers.
They almost got acquired, or kind of acqui-hired, for single-digit millions of dollars. Like, you know, a couple of the big social networks were talking to them. And they could have took that. You know, they would have made probably, you know, $1 million, $2 million amongst themselves if they did it. But they said, all right, fuck it. YOLO, one more try. They released this new app, Paparazzi, and it hits. And it hits big. And so we'll see if this is going to last, right? No, social apps, this could be like a TBH, could be like a Clubhouse, it could be the next Snapchat, right? That's the thing with social apps, is they all start out looking the same. They look kind of silly. They sound kind of dumb. And then, you know, you fast forward a year, and then, you know, some people are proven right. I told you that was dumb. It faded away. And then for some people like me, I think I was right about Clubhouse, my famous Clubhouse prediction. I think it's being proven right. You know, their downloads went from like 1 million to 4 million to 10 million, and then back to 2 million, 1 million, half a million, right?
Do you have intel? Are you right?
I mean, the download numbers would tell us a story that I'm right so far now. But when I was saying it, it looked like this thing was going to take off. They had just had 10 million downloads in a month, which is insane. Now it looks like I'm right. But of course, it could turn around. Maybe they could prove me wrong. But
how did this one app get popular?
So I don't know exactly how it got popular. It's very cleverly architected, the way their sort of flow works to get you to invite friends. But I think there was just like a novel hook with this. So why is it called Paparazzi? It's called Paparazzi because on every other social network, you post about yourself, right? I go post on Instagram. I post a photo from my camera that I took about me and my life. And if I post a story, same thing. Paparazzi is just like the name sounds. It's other people taking pictures of you, which is kind of funny, right? So like your profile is not pictures you upload about yourself, which tends to be you kind of in a manicured setup environment, making yourself look good. With Paparazzi, it's other people taking pictures of you. And that sort of is like a photo tag onto your wall. And so your whole profile is just pictures that other people took of you, and you can sort of like accept them or deny them if you don't like the photo or whatever. And so that creates a cool dynamic where now you're getting people in more candid shots because it's other people taking photos, and which makes the content more interesting. It's more raw than what you're getting on Facebook. It's more raw than what you're getting on Instagram. It's even more raw than what Snapchat was, which this is the game Snapchat played on Facebook. Snapchat was more raw and candid because the photos disappeared. So people, they had less of a filter on what they posted, but still they wanted to, you know, post a certain type of thing that made themselves look good. This is even more raw than Snapchat. It's even more candid. It's content that wouldn't have made it to Snapchat, makes it onto Paparazzi, which is what makes it interesting. Now you're getting new shit shared that you wouldn't have otherwise got. So that's the premise of it. What do you think of this?
Never in a million years would I have thought this was going to work. And I can't decide if I just have bad taste or if I'm old. Is that the app?
I'm opening the app. There's like a hype video.
Do you,
which is cool. More apps should do that. They should have like a trailer, like instead of a boring onboarding, this thing is playing me like, here, I'm going to play the music. It's like, let's get it, pop in. And then there's pictures of all these like cute boys and girls. My phone is literally vibrating. It's like, that's the most excitement an app has ever showed me.
So do you, but when you were looking at this, did you think that this, so I get that it's popular now and it's easy to say, yeah, I get it, but.
No, I would have never predicted this, right? Like, okay, you would have told me, I'd been like, huh, that's clever, but still probably not going to fucking work, right? Like, it seems so unlikely for anything to just like hit like this is so unlikely, and it's not the expected things. So you sort of by default, you don't imagine that this would hit. Same thing with Clubhouse. I was like, oh, that's cool. I've seen a bunch of things like that. I don't really see why this one will go viral, but it did. And so it's very hard to predict with social. Even I spent like maybe like 5-6 years of my life trying to build social stuff. I knew everybody in the space. I tried so many different things. So I would say I'm not like a novice to this stuff, but it's very, very hard to predict. And our friend Jack Smith says this best. He goes, if you look at even the guys who invested in Snapchat or WhatsApp or whatever, they go and they Sequoia, the best venture fund that's, you know, ever existed, basically. They invest in WhatsApp. They invested in every single round of WhatsApp. They led every round, which was a genius move. So when it exits for $19-20 billion, they were huge winners out of that. Cool. Guess what they also invested in? Yik Yak, a social product that died. Whisper, a social product that died, right? Like they have a graveyard of other things they tried that didn't work out. And I don't know if those are the exact ones that they invest in, but they have a bunch. And so Jack pointed out, he's like, if even the best guys who have had the home runs have a bunch of swings and misses with social, it just shows how hard it is to like correctly predict social before it plays out.
I have a friend who was in the seed stage, a friend of a friend. He was in the seed stage of Robinhood and a whole bunch of other stuff, and probably worth multi-billions, for sure worth multi-billions. And someone was asking him about social apps and about consumer stuff. And he goes, honestly, if the person's competent, maybe do it. But really, it's just gambling. And I have no idea which one's going to work. He said, he goes, with B2B stuff, I can kind of like, I can look at some stuff and be like, oh, okay, I understand. You can, right. you can, the likelihood that you can make this at least a mild success is quite high. But with social and some basic consumer stuff, it's just, I'm just rolling dice and I have very little confidence in any of it.
So the beautiful thing about social, like who would try this, right? Like, because you're right. It's so hard to predict. If you're a great entrepreneur and you go into this space, you're going to a casino and you're saying, all right, my odds at the craps table are, you know, 51. I'm a 49 to 51 underdog. Blackjack, I'm 49 to 51. Oh, you have, you know, whatever Chinese backgammon over here. Okay, I'll go play Pai Gao. I'm gonna go play Pai Gao, even though the odds are, you know, 80% chance of loss. It's like, why do you do that? Because it's A, it's fun, and B, when you get social right, you're the fucking king of the universe, right? Like, it's like, yeah, my app is the one that's used by like a billion people every day of their life. Their whole social scene is on here. They use it with their mom, their friends, their girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. And so it just hits different when you hit social. And that's why I love even talking about things that are social that hit, because it's a rare type of game that you kind of have to be a madman to go play.
So let me bring up something that's the total opposite of this, which is you don't have to be a madman. And the likelihood that it's going to succeed is incredibly high, but it may not be like a huge winner.
Okay.
Can you guess? Just with that information, do you know where I'm going with this?
I see vending machines on our thing. And I think that a vending machine business is probably the most predictable, simple, understandable, guaranteed type of business you could do. Is that what you're going to?
Yes. So these two folks came to me and they pitched this idea. They're raising money for it. It's a vending machine business for, it basically is mostly female products, so tampons and stuff in bathrooms. And oddly enough, I had another guy email me a deck about a vending machine business, and I'm not going to do that one. But this first one was kind of intriguing. They've got some traction. They're making money. It's kind of intriguing. And I started doing some research, and I tweeted out, who knows everything about, who's the person who talked about vending machine? It got a ton of traction for some reason. I think a lot of people are interested in this. This guy named Quinn Miller reached out to me, and I did a call with him this morning. Very fascinating. He worked, and I just want to bring this up because this is the exact opposite of what we were just talking about.
Right.
But it's oddly as compelling and as interesting, even though it's the two totally different parts of the world. So this guy, he's 27. He worked in software sales. He quit about a year ago to start this business. He's got a vending machine business, and he gave me all of his numbers, and he said I could reveal it. So he's about 10 months into the thing. He's currently doing $15,000 in monthly revenue, and he's doing that across 27 machines. His startup costs were $600, $500 or $400 to buy a machine and $200 to fix it and move it to the place where it had to go.
By the way, this is our weekly blue collar side hustle. This is the perfect blue collar side hustle. Yeah.
So on the $15,000 in revenue, 65% is profit. So he's doing around $9,800 a month in profit so far. Total investment into the biz so far, after he already bought his first machine, has been $50,000. Time involvement per week, relatively high, 20 hours a week, because he's actually delivering all the stuff. I asked him all about it. I was like, how does this work? Because the reason I reached out to this guy was I was like, hey, there's this like tampon startup. It kind of looks interesting. What's your tampon vending machine startup? What's your opinion? He goes, yeah, I mean, I obviously don't know anything about that like too much. But basically, my opinion is the world, he goes, America runs on Coke and Monster Energy drink. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, let me explain. So I put these vending machines.
I love that.
So
let's slow down. So the guy basically buys vending machines like you and I are used to, just a snack vending machine. Nothing innovative there.
Well, he does one quote innovative thing. He installs a credit card machine on him for about $250. You can get a credit card machine.
Okay, so he gets his vending machine. He says, "All right, people aren't carrying quarters, so I'm going to take cards." So he buys each machine, you said, for $500?
First one was $500. He has 27 machines with $50,000. So whatever that math is. So what's that?
$2,000 a machine, roughly.
Yeah.
Okay, so he buys a $1,000 to $2,000 machine. He puts it in places like what? Office buildings, apartments?
Yeah, so he cold calls lower income hotels, motels, assisted living places, and low income apartments. Low income apartments. Motels, assisted living places.
Okay, great. So he goes and he basically says, hey, put this here, and there's a revenue split or he pays rent. How does that work?
So most of these businesses, the way that they work is they give 10% to 20% to the real estate folk.
Right.
This guy, he goes, I actually am, because I sold software, I'm pretty good at sales and I do what's called a value sell. And he goes, basically, I say, look, your tenants are, if I just improve your tenant experience by just a small percent, maybe you're going to make more money because someone will want to stay or want to rent here.
He gives them nothing.
He gives them nothing. So he keeps, and so he's got a bunch of machines in like 10 different locations and he just cold calls them. And then it's so unsophisticated. Where does he get his stuff? Costco. So he buys a can of Coke from Costco for 33 cents and he charges a dollar for it.
Right.
And it's very simple. Not complicated at all.
By the way, my grandfather used to have a vending machine. So this was probably the first business I ever encountered was, I think I was probably 5 years old and my parents, you know, they worked. So my dad would work in an office building and he needed me to be babysat. But then like, you know, old people also kind of need babysitting. So my dad went for a 2-for-1. He basically bought or rented out a little, like kind of like a corner store inside, like a little deli inside of the office building. And then my grandfather ran it and we used to go like work the register at the age of, you know, 7. And he was like, he occupied his grandparents and his kids without having to like pay for any like caretakers. In fact, it made a little bit of money. And then my grandfather had this vending machine that we used to go and do this exact refill. We would go to Costco, buy the Cokes, put it in. He would collect a bag of like change And then we would like go to the bank and like exchange the change. And I remember being like, what is this? He had one vending machine as his business.
It sounds awesome. And I asked the guy, by the way, this guy's name is Quinn Miller. I'll give him a shout out, Quinn Miller. I asked him, I go, how big can this get? He goes, look, I'm not trying to be offensive or anything, but the operators of these businesses typically are pretty hillbilly. Right. And so they're pretty unsophisticated, which doesn't mean they're dumb. They're just not sophisticated in terms of like technology or anything like that. And they like, there's a low key, easy life. He goes, but I met a guy in Palm Springs who had about 1600 machines and he was making anywhere from 5 to 10 million in revenue with about half in profit.
Right.
And I was like, well, that's pretty amazing. How else can it get big? Like what else is big? And he said that there's a company called Canteen and I looked it up. I think it's public. But they do like $15 billion in sales of this, and they're the largest vending machine company in America.
They operate them.
Yeah, and they do distribution. So the thing is like what this guy does, Quinn, he finds his route. So he finds a route. So he's like, all right, if I go from destination A to B, it's a straight line. I'll do everything in between. And right. So I try to find locations on the way so one truck can do all of it in an easy, short amount of time. And he's like, I'm very specific about where I choose. And that's where you make a lot of money is you can be very efficient with your time. And right. So basically that's what he does. And he said, this company Canteen just does that on a huge scale. And they're ultimately at the end of the day, a logistics company and a bit of a supply chain company. But at this point, Quinn told me, he was like, I rented a small warehouse now because I'm getting so much freaking coke. He goes, the reason I like doing that. And so back to tampons, he goes, you have to like look at what the repeat purchase rate is. He goes, if I go to like a lower income area, these folks love Coke and love Monster to the point that one guy will drink 5 Cokes a day. I'm getting $5 from him. You have to ask yourself, can you get that for tampons or other products? And he goes, in fact, a lot of the vending guys, once they move from Coke and Monster Energy Drink, they're starting to go into what's called honesty market. So basically at a WeWork, you know how they like you swipe your credit card and you only take one sandwich for $8?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like, that's where the money is right now.
Huh. That's so interesting. And it's almost like there's whales for the vending machine. It's not like everybody buys one every 3 days. It's like one guy drinks 9 Cokes a day or, you know, 4 Red Bulls, you know, a week. And that's where you make your money is on the like 10% of the residents who buy like 90% of the goods or something like that, probably.
Yeah, this guy was interesting, man. He's only 27. He lives in San Diego, worked in tech sales. He told me that he goes, like, basically, I was pretty good at selling software. I'm not the best, but I'm pretty good. And this industry that I went into, they're just kind of not that great at that many stuff. And I could outsell relatively easily. I could kind of outwork relatively easily. And so anyway, fascinating story.
So you know, we have the Billy of the week. I think this needs to be the Hilly of the week. It's the hillbilly business. That's actually great. So Quinn Miller, you are the Hilly of the week. Congratulations. I love this business. So just to summarize, buy the thing for $1,000, cold call, you know, apartment complexes, motels, hotels, you know, lower income, the better, I guess is the way that this market works. And then you're trying to generate, he's generating off of, what'd you say? 50 machines?
27.
27 off of 27 machines. He's generating about 100 to 120K of profit a year. And so that's, you know, that's the business. And then what's the work? It sounds like it could be easily, you know, delegated, but sounds like he wants to do it and keep his margins, which is you go, you buy the stuff wholesale, and then you stock all the machines on some regular cadence and you collect, you know, the payments on the other side. So that's it.
I was so fascinated. So like when people call me a tech guy, I'm like, not really. I work in publishing. Like I'm a publisher, but I guess if compared to someone who works in vending machine, I am a tech guy. And so I like these like big things, software companies that can scale. But when I heard him describing this, I'm like, God, I want to get in on this. Like, this is just so, like, you know what I mean? That, like, totally. It's like, we just got done talking about paparazzi and how this young guy named Nikita, who sold an app for $100 million to Facebook and is probably 26 years old, baller. Like, you'll die a billionaire if you just breathe. Okay. That's sick. But then I hear this shit about this guy who spent 50 grand and is going to make $150,000 a year in profit. And I'm like, fuck yeah, sign me up. Let's get into this. So I think it's kind of interesting. I like hearing about it.
Yeah. Whatever floats your boat. You know, let's do some quick, like, other ideas or other brains. So I think, first of all, I'll say the beauty of this is that you don't need to come up with a genius twist on it. You just do the same thing in your local market and it would work. Okay. So that's cool. But if you were going to do a twist, right? Like I like to dabble in ideas. So let's come up with some ideas. here's a couple that I think might be interesting as twists. You mentioned the honesty market. What do you call it? Honesty market?
That's what he called it. Yeah.
So I've seen this at big companies. They do this like at the Adobe office. I remember they did this, which is like, there's a bunch of sandwiches in a thing. You take it out and you pay and nobody's watching you. So there's no labor cost. And they just hope that you're not going to steal shit. And that works in certain types of like high-end places. You said WeWork, things like that. Okay. I think that's cool. So maybe there's an opportunity there. What about subscription? So if you're taking my credit card and you got this vending machine, how do you get me with saying, hey, you could buy this one right now. You could buy this one can of Coke for a dollar, but for $6 a week, you can get unlimited Coke, right? You can get unlimited vending machine swipes. And you basically set up a recurring revenue business off of the residents in the place. And, it's like a breakage model. So, they just can't empty you out. And
dude, I think that's the move, but you're wrong. It's not unlimited.
No, it's capped, right? But the machine caps you. Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, it's user whatever. I don't know how they would know that you're you. I guess that's a little bit of a tricky one. You'd have to swipe your card every time, which feels bad.
You just need like a Metro card, you know, like a Metro card or like
exactly.
A, like
you need a Clipper card or whatever, where you basically get a certain amount.
So the question is this: if you're gonna spend, so when I lived in college, I had a vending machine. Would I spend $30 a month on that vending machine? I think yes.
I think I did. Yeah.
I think I did.
We had Snapples, and I couldn't resist.
Right. So then the question is, you just have to ask yourself, are you willing to give up 15% of your revenue in order to give the customer a discount if they pay up front?
Yeah, but I think it works both ways. So you get two benefits. One is they prepay, so you float all the money that way and you're able to like cash flow the business better. The second thing is not everybody's going to maximize the value. So there's like a breakage model where some people use the full amount. Great. And if 30% of people don't max out, that's just free money for you that you didn't have to spend a dime on. And easily, I think this is the ugly side of most subscription businesses is that people don't use the subscription. They just don't remember. They don't cancel. They're either too lazy or they forgot. And you sit here thinking you have all these happy customers. And in reality, go look at your usage numbers. How happy are they if they haven't used you in a year and a half and you're just charging their card? And so that's the truth about subscription businesses. Why people love them is because the people set it and forget it. And so, I think the same thing would happen here. All right. So that's another idea. Last one I'll bring up with this vending machine thing is I'm buddies with the guy who started Life Aid. He came on the podcast. They have
I remember that.
Fit Aid, Party Aid, Recovery Aid, whatever, Sleep Aid, whatever they are. They have a bunch of different drinks. I'm like addicted to Fit Aid. It's like my whole mini fridge in my gym here is stocked with them. And he got his break by giving, he basically went to CrossFit gyms and he said, hey, CrossFit, you don't have a mini fridge? I will give you a free mini fridge and a case of Fit Aid. Here you go. Here's a $79 mini fridge and a case of Fit Aid. Try it out. Give it to your people. Let me know what they think. And if they like it or if you like it and you guys making a little bit of income off this, just give me a call back or, I'll send you a second case next month. And so this is how he grew the brand was through the CrossFit gym network. And specifically with this idea that they didn't have fridges. So they didn't have a vending machine. They didn't have a fridge. They couldn't have a vending machine because you can't be CrossFit and then sell Kit Kat bars. That doesn't work. What you could do is you could make the post-workout machine and you could put it in every gym. What's in the post-workout machine? It's Gatorade, Propel, it's Fit Aid, it's all
who
the
did that?
All the no, I'm just saying you could do this. This is an idea. And then you have like, the BCAAs, like the branched chain amino acids you should take post-workout as a little supplement. It could have hydrant for your hydration needs. So you could put a whole bunch of post-workout stuff that people take, protein powders, protein pre-mixed drinks. You could put it all in a vending machine and put it in gyms. I think you could have a similar model.
Yeah, I think that could work. I don't know actually what the margins are on health food versus a Coke. I imagine they're the same, to be honest. But I'm into it. Yeah. I think that those honesty market things, I bet works shockingly well.
Yeah, I remember when we were doing the sushi restaurant, we met the guys who started Panera or something like that. And Panera Bread was doing this actually, I think in St. Louis. They opened
they're from St. Louis.
The first pay what you want restaurant. So pay what you can, I think is what they called it at the time, which is like anybody could go and you could eat and you just pick what you want. And at the end it says, pay whatever you want. the average person pays $12. And what he said was that the average ticket price in that restaurant was higher than their normal ticket, than their normal restaurants where they have fixed prices. You would think, oh, people are going to scam you, cheat you. And he basically said it's a bell curve. 20% of people go over, 20% of people go under, and most of the people pay the exact same. You know, but when you look at how the exact numbers break down, it's a little bit higher because people eat more and because they feel like they're getting a deal. And the customers were happier because they didn't, you know, it's a kind of like a feel-good story. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Then again, I also, when he was talking, I was like, this sounds a little bit like PR. So I'm going to like discount what you're saying by like 30% here.
I might do this for fun.
Do what?
I might do this vending
machine. The vending machine thing? I think it's a great idea. I think you should do it as the just basically build it in public for the podcast. I think you should basically give us updates on how the vending machine biz is going.
I think I will. I think I'm going to do it.
I love it.
I think this is a fun weekend thing. You want to talk about one more thing? You want to do Ghost Kitchen for gifting?
Yeah. So so it was my trainer's birthday yesterday or 2 days ago, and I was like, "Oh shit, want to get him something. What do I get him?" Right? And so I was like, okay, I'm not great at buying gifts. Buying gifts is like a huge pain in the ass. I'm a procrastinator. So like today is his birthday. So I can't like order something online. It's not going to arrive. It's going to clearly be like, I ordered this on your birthday. It's going to arrive 3 days later.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's who I am. I'm fucked up, right? Like that's just the reality of the situation. And so I was like, okay, well, what do I do that? What can I do now that will like arrive today? And how do I be a good friend who's also a lazy bastard? And so my go-to recently has just been, I just surprise order people Postmates or Uber Eats stuff. I'll just order, you know, like two Jamba Juices to somebody's house. And they're like, and I'm just texting them, be like, hey, they think, you know, there's something for you outside. And they're like, what? And they go and they pick it up, or they, you know, the person rings the doorbell and says, hey, this is for you. And people love this shit. It happened to me, somebody on my birthday, instead of getting me a birthday gift, they just ordered me food from a restaurant that I like. And I was like, this is fantastic. And like, sometimes the logistics don't work because you're like not there or whatever. Like it's not perfect. But the food ordering apps, I think they recognize this because now, like recently in all their apps, they kind of have like a gift a meal like option. But what it made me think of was, oh, what's the actual business? You know what that phrase is where, have you ever seen this diagram where there's like a street or like a walkway where you're walking? And it's like an L, right? Like I walk straight, then I turn left. And then there's like, if you cut across, you get there faster. And you could see in the grass, people, so many people have cut across. It's like worn out. It's called like a happy path or something like that. Like a desire path. It's basically like you show what people actually want to do. It's called the desire path. And so similarly, I think the desire path here is not to randomly order food, have to ask your friend for their exact address, hope that they're there to receive it. So you can't really surprise them. But instead, why doesn't somebody make the version of like edible arrangements or like one of these like gift basket products on top of Uber Eats and Postmates and all these companies that we all already use? So if you're on top of DoorDash, it already has my credit card. I'm already opening the app every day. Why doesn't somebody make the best way to just send a gift product to somebody else as a ghost kitchen on top of this? I think this is a no-brainer successful idea.
What does edible arrangements do?
Oh, you never had it? Basically, it sends like a kind of like a platter or a gift basket to somebody. And
I know that.
In a like cool format. And this business does like hundreds of millions of dollars. Like it's a very, very successful business. Old school business.
No, I get that. But how is this any different than you just ordering food for someone?
So what edible range, it looks like a gift. Like it's like a gift basket. It's got like
a bow on it. And you want to do that for a restaurant?
No, I think somebody should make a ghost kitchen on top of Uber Eats and DoorDash that is specifically a way to send food gifts to other people. It looks like a gift. It's like a giant chocolate thing,
that's
right?
Interesting.
It's like a giant fruit arrangement. It's hearts and strawberries and chocolate covered strawberries or whatever, right? Like it's stuff like that. And it basically, and like instead of, you know, when in DoorDash where it says customize your order, you're like, you know, I'm allergic to gluten. And instead of this, it's like, what's your gift message? We print it out. We put it in there, right? Like, the thing you want to be a thoughtful person is like a cool looking thing that looks like a gift and it comes with a little message, but I want it as a last minute option. And the way to do that is as a ghost kitchen, I think.
So I was talking to Andrew this last podcast and then I talked to him afterwards. I called him. I go, hey, what we were talking about was pretty interesting. Tell me more. So he started this bakery. bakeries. Basically, Andrew is being Andrew. He's always tinkering, and he was like, I want low carb, like something to satisfy me, like bread.
Right.
And so he uses this thing called sucrose, I think, some or monk fruit, some alternative sweetener.
Right.
And he got the guy to, he hired a chef and he paid him a small amount of money, single digit, low hundreds of dollars, to come to his house for a few hours and make these recipes.
What is single digits, low hundreds of dollars? What does that mean?
Like, I don't, like two,
like
three,
a
four.
Dollar?
No, like single, as in not like 800 or I guess that, yeah.
Okay.
You're right.
You paid him a few hundred bucks. Gotcha.
Yeah, a few hundred dollars to come and make a bunch of muffins, I think, is what he made.
Okay.
And he had him use this monk fruit thing. He goes, this is sick. And he designed a website called, I forget what it was called. Something like, I forget. He made a little website on Shopify for the brand. And then he put it on a DoorDash or Uber Eats. And he sent it to a bunch of friends. And he only did local delivery in Victoria. Right. And he had the meal delivery company do it. Dude, he sold like $3,000 in month one worth of stuff. And he's right. Like invested $8,000 into it. So he didn't make a profit. But it kind of sick. He was able to test this idea very easily. And he's, I'm like, man, of all the stuff that you do, this like agency that, which makes more, way more money, this bakery thing is so much more fascinating than like just, doing a design work for someone. This is way neater to me.
Right.
And anyway, so I think you could test this so easily.
Yeah, totally. Because you could just rent out a commissary kitchen for the hour, right? You don't even have to commit to very long, right? So you could rent these things by the hour. So you can rent it for a couple weeks, a few hundred bucks, maybe $1,000 max. You list your restaurant on your Fiverr logo. You list your ghost kitchen on DoorDash or Uber Eats. You pick one city and you start. And if this works, you basically just, you become the easiest way for people in that city to send a thoughtful little gift to others. The key is you don't have to spend the money acquiring customers, right? So like you could have always done this business, but you would be competing against, 1-800-Flowers and Edible Arrangements. And I forgot what the other ones, like David something, where you send like chocolate. Like I did this for my neighbor. My neighbor lets us use their playground with my kid. And so I sent them like a big like chocolate gift basket or something like that. Cause like, I don't know, I need to do something nice and I don't want to make anything. So like, how do I spend $100 and give a thoughtful, nice gift to somebody, make them happy for 5 minutes. And so I did the same. So that's what I want to do, but I don't want to have to go Google search and figure out the brand and then like go through their website and input my credit card. No, I already opened DoorDash 6 times a week. It should just be there. My credit card's saved. I push the button and it goes to the person and it's done.
What's your grocery bill every month?
Dude, groceries are insane. I don't know if I'm insane or if inflation has happened, but I went to the grocery store, no joke, last 2 times I went to the grocery store, it's $450 to $500 for me, my wife, and I have a baby who drinks breast milk. So that doesn't even count. And then we have like a 20-month-old. So
do you go to Whole Foods?
It's Whole Foods, but like Whole Foods, it wasn't a $500 trip for me before. It was like a $200 trip. So I think we got like a little crazy being like, yeah, let's buy these like $9 juices or something like that. I don't know what's happening, but it's crazy. What's yours?
I would have to look, but I imagine it would be between $1,000 to $1,500 a month.
$1,000. Okay. So that's like $400 a week. So about the same.
Yeah. But my thing is, even before I had anything, I would always spend a lot on it because my logic was, what's the point of living if you don't feel good? And so I'm going to buy the highest quality stuff. And I don't care about price.
Yeah. My logic was, I want this. I really want to eat this right now.
No, look, like when it comes to books, I don't care what the price is.
Same.
And I don't even care if I read it. If I just get one sentence from it,
zero guilt.
Yeah. It could change my life forever. So I don't care. Like there was one time I saw this book and it was $80. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, nope, I don't care. I'm buying it. Mostly it's the same thing with groceries. So like the healthiest, freshest stuff that, Like for example, I used to buy like Kroger. That's like the grocery store in Nashville. Kroger generic cheese. And like, if I thought about that now, I'm like, oh, I can't even think about eating that right now.
Thing where you're like, you look at your parents and you're like, yo, what were you thinking? Like,
yes,
cheese in a can and like,
yeah,
this was like our every Thursday. Butter. Yeah, every Thursday we used to eat like Totino's, pizza rolls and like
yes.
Tikkatis or whatever those things are. Like
or like yogurt. Yes, yeah, same exact thing.
That was the regular food we ate. That wasn't like the one-off thing.
If you ask my mom what a carb is, I don't think she could still tell you. So dude, like I just
my mom would straight up be like, this is good, it has carbs. I'm like, no, mom, see, that's the problem. You know this has carbs, and you're like, yeah, pasta. That's a good hearty meal. I'm like, no. That, mom, that's like, because she's still like, you know, but I can't even blame her. Dude, the food pyramid, how big of a lie was that? That was like a middle finger to America. The bottom of the food pyramid is like, get your grains and your carbs in, cereals and pastas and breads. And then like vegetables has this small little half slice on the third layer. Like fruits and vegetables just got like, you know, shoved in last minute, right next to dessert. It's crazy.
Yeah. Like how many grams of sugar are in a can of Coke ballpark, you know?
I think it's like 30, 40 grams. Yeah. It's like
great. Insane. So that's the ballpark. Yeah. So I think it's like a little bit more than 40. If you ask my family, like growing up, how many grams are, they're like, I have no, a million. I don't know. Like what's a gram? Yeah. Like, I don't know. And also like, if I told them 45, they'd be like, I don't, is that
right?
45%? Like, is that good? Like we're not 100%. Sounds good to me. They wouldn't know. Right. So I think that there's something here, but growing up, I
in middle school, I used to eat the school lunch in Texas. I grew up in Houston, Texas in middle school. And this is my first time where like, yeah, mom stopped packing my lunch and I started to buy the school lunch, seventh grade. And straight up every single day, I ate a Frito pie, which is, by the way, that's not even like a meal. Like you can't go to a restaurant and order a Frito pie because all it is it's a bag of Fritos emptied into a basket and then chili and cheese put on it like nachos. I ate that every day. It tastes fucking amazing, by the way. But I ate that every single day as a kid. And my parents, where was the intervention? That's what I want to know. Where was the intervention? That should not have happened.
I definitely think it's changing now. I don't think it's changed entirely at all, but I think it has.
Yeah, Jamie Oliver died for this, man. He tried to change the schools or whatever.
Yeah, the Naked Chef. So when it comes to like budgeting, for food, because like I'm putting this in my body. Okay, I need it to be like the best stuff. So, right. But I did just drink like a Diet Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, so I was going to say, pretty sure I've seen you just house like a whole Halloween, a small child's like Halloween haul.
I do.
Before a podcast one time.
it is a huge weakness of mine, but whatever. I mostly do good. I'll have to do an update. So I'll say it now. I've been taking TRT now for about a year.
Yeah.
And both Sean and I invested in this TRT company called
Peak. It's
switching its name. And we'll like do an update on it. But basically, like I took it not to change my body. I took it because like I was feeling down and I got tested and they're like, oh, your T's real low. It has made me jacked. Like totally jacked. Like I feel like
still feeling down, but dude, I'm just...
So we're going to have to do an update on this. And I told these guys, I was like, you know, like, I don't know if I want to post a shirtless pic, but I might be open to it. If you want to do like a, cause they're appealing to like nerds.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm that but I look like a kind of a shredded nerd right now. Maybe I could be like if you want me to post a pic, like a before and after, I will. Right. But, oh my God, this TRT stuff, I feel amazing.
That is crazy. So you were taking this before, but you switched to Peak. Is that what you did?
I took it for a little while and then I got off of it when I got, Lyme, because I couldn't get like a refill, something like that. And then I got I'm back on it again now. And I started using Peak. Pretty cool service. I'm not telling anyone to take this, by the way. This is like some doctor shit.
Yeah.
But it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Don't come to our podcast for either financial or medical advice, to be honest.
Yeah. But we just
say what we do and what works for us. That doesn't mean it's going to work for anybody else. No promises for anybody.
I'm eating Whole Foods and I'm shooting up with TRT and like
your body's just transforming.
My body is completely transformed in the last 6 months. I'm just like crazy strong. I have pretty low body fat, like 15%, which isn't that low, but pretty low. And I just feel like a professional athlete. So that's pretty awesome.
That's amazing. Congratulations. I think now we know what to do with the live show. You just need to take off your shirt. I think that's going to be your contribution. And then I'll prepare some content.
Well, I sent you a pic and Tom was like, you look like a white ape. You look like a white
Yeah, you
do. Gorilla.
You look like a gorilla. You look like you looked like stunning. Like when you wear your shirt, like right now, if somebody's watching on our YouTube channel, which you should, youtube.com/hustlecon, I think is it?
Yeah.
If they see you right now, they're going to be like, I'm not meaning this as an insult, but you just look like an average person right now.
Yes.
You sent me that picture and you looked like my bodyguard. Like you looked, you looked like somebody I would hire to protect me, which was insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. So, Anyway, we'll do an update about that. My birthday is coming up in June, and I thought about maybe I'll post a shirtless pic just to like celebrate.
Why aren't you? Why don't you wear shirts that make you look more jacked? You wear stuff that like makes you look non-jacked. Are you trying to do some Clark Kent Superman shit?
I don't know.
It's not intentional.
It's not intentional. I don't think about it. So we meandered a bit. We'll see if this turns out to be any good.
No, dude, that was great. The vending machine stuff alone was the price of entry. I think people will, you know, go check out Paparazzi, Vimeo. That was okay. And then the ghost kitchens for gifting, I think is like a cool idea, but nobody's going to go do that. But I think the vending machine thing was the star of the show today.
What do you think, Abreu?
Or should we ask Dan? Because Abreu, you know, handing off the baton to Dan. So let's start with Dan and then let's go to Abreu. Let's go for the apprentice and then the master.
All right. I liked the Paparazzi. I liked the Vimeo. The vending machines, I don't know. I looked at that when I was in high school, actually.
Oh, damn. The contrarian. I love it.
Yeah. And then the ghost kitchens. I don't know. You guys use DoorDash and stuff. Maybe I'm just too old. I don't use that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like that's one thing that I'm always like, yeah, everybody uses DoorDash six times a week. I'm like, oh, wait, probably not. Probably most people don't. But
that, Dan, you don't use DoorDash? No. Or you don't use
to cook.
Yeah, but what do you do when you don't want to cook?
I usually go out to eat or I'll pick something up. I don't think that.
Like, you like to cook all the time?
Like, yeah, he's like, I like to cook. It's like, dude, but you eat 20. What do you do for the other 18 times?
Yeah, exactly. I've been intermittent fasting.
I also like to cook. So
I also like to cook.
We have that in
Sunday.
Common, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, I cooked too last month.
I don't think it's even an older person thing. Like, it's just expensive. You're just paying so much for the delivery.
Yeah, but like, what do you do when it's like,
what do you do when you're hungry? All
right, when I have an 8-figure exit.
I guess, yeah.
So you cook every meal?
Yeah, just about. But I also eat like chicken nuggets for lunch. So.
Okay, so give me yesterday's menu. What did you eat? Breakfast, lunch,
yesterday,
and dinner? And snack. I want to
yesterday, I'll start with dinner. It was mashed potato, kielbasa, frozen veggies. Toasted Hawaiian bread, whatever it's called. Lunch is always the same thing. Okay. It's carrots and chicken nuggets every single day.
So I feed my dog.
And then morning is just like coffee.
Okay, what's kielbasa?
It's like a Polish sausage. Yeah.
God, you had Polish sausage with Hawaiian bread and what?
Mashed potatoes, frozen veggies.
Dude, so you're not on the Whole Foods tip.
Dude, that's...
Yeah, you're eating like my mom. My mom taught me to eat.
You're starting a company, Abreu. It's like, at least go in the Whole Foods scholarship and eat. And you gotta, like, when you're on the Whole Foods scholarship, you fill the plate with the hot food and then you take a cart and you walk around while you're eating it. And then you just bounce.
I'll have to try that.
You can pay him back when you're done.
Okay.
But like, that's crazy to me.
Dan, what do you eat? I feel like now I feel like an asshole. Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Like, I'm supposed to be eating kielbasa for dinner?
I have a little Instant Pot spice pack business. So make a Instant Pot meal a few times a week. So I got some.
Dan, coming in hot with the plug. What is it? What's the business?
AniSpices.com. AniSpices.com.
So you put spices into Instant Pot and then what? You put just like chicken in there or what?
Yeah, so the biggest thing I thought was the challenge with the Instant Pot was measuring out all the spices if you wanted to make something. So I had a butter chicken recipe. It took 2 minutes to do everything but the spices. So we sell a pack that's compostable. It has the recipe, has all the spices. You just open it up, dump it in. Makes using an Instant Pot much easier.
That's not a bad idea. Okay, how's the business doing?
It kind of went on hold when COVID hit, so I'm spinning it back up. So.
Why would it go on hold for COVID? Like, you had to go on hold?
Yeah, I ended up losing all my clients. I was doing consulting for events, and that kind of disappeared overnight.
I see. Okay, gotcha. And so you paused the business. Okay, but are we in the tens of dollars, hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, tens of thousands?
We're in like the hundreds of dollars a month. So.
Okay. All right. So everybody go to Ani Spices, order something. Let's get them into the thousands of dollars. I'll get one. What's your best one? Is butter chicken recipe?
Butter chicken. I have a little Indian three pack. We have a Rogan Josh, an Indian curried lentils, and a butter chicken.
If I take off my shirt, I also have a little Indian three pack.
Yeah. That's my nickname for Sean. What's it? What, that I mean, that was easy. You just
Thank you for the assist.
Dan, what's the URL?
ANISpices.com.
ANISpices.com.
Yep.
All right. And Dan, so Abreu grades us at the end of every episode. Abreu, what'd you give this one?
I thought the vending machine thing was worth it. That made it an A-. Everything else was a... So in the A's, thanks to the vending machine.
And then Dan, are you more Simon Cowell? Are you harsh or are you Paula Abdul? You just give everybody A's. What's your grading style?
Let's do this one as a B+. I feel like there's... Okay.
Abreu's literally has never given us a B. It's only an A.
It's an A or like
grading skills, A- or A.
Dude, it only used to be B's. You guys started actually doing some work and you got some A's.
All right, fair enough. All right, good stuff. Let's leave all this in. This is fine. People can enjoy this. So, all right, we're out of here. See you in Austin. See you in Miami. I bought my tickets this morning.
I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back. Oh, yeah.